want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not going to take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, country, if I really, really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting people roar, and I'd like to give you information, asking for love, but makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Common Sense Show. I am your host, Dave Hodges, and back from death's doorstep. I had a little virus this week. My son had it, passed it along to me, and seem to be bouncing back. If this were yesterday morning in the 102 temperature, I don't know that I'd be here, but I am glad to be here because this is one of the highlights of my week. I just love doing this show. Well, before we get into what the show is going to consist of tonight, very quickly, you guys made your feelings known loud and clear. You don't want the traditional commercial breaks as we go through the show. I would point out to you that good friends of mine have radio shows, very good friends of mine, very good shows, and they do that, and I know many of you listen. But I've heard you, and I agree, but the one thing it does keep us from doing is I have to keep turning down radio stations that want to piggyback onto our broadcast, and we're now counting at six that have wanted to do that in the last month. But to defray our costs, and some of the people who I say sponsor this show, sometime I do horse trading. And they don't necessarily contribute directly to the show in terms of our online live ad reads. And I agree. I don't really want to have interruptions. We don't have the 15, 30, 45 that you typically do, but we need to offset costs here. The reality is we're on satellite. We broadcast on satellite. We have an app. We're supported by a website, and that all takes money. And people told me, well, if you have these built-in commercials, we'll never listen again. I heard that a lot, and I'm thinking, okay, well, you kind of want something for nothing, don't you? And so I'm going to throw out the gauntlet to you, and this is what I know Rick Wiles does this and a lot of other people, and Rick has a great, great, great capital G show, a great organization, great man, and he gets donations, and we're going to have to really turn to that to offset these costs. And so if you care to make a donation to the Common Sense Show, we'll make this a feature rather than adding on stations. We'll simply stay in the mode that we're in, but we're going to ask you to contribute to covering the expenses related to our operation. And you can do that by sending a generous gift to Post Office Box 32, Whitman with two T's, Whitman two N's, Arizona 85361. Whitman, Arizona 85361. Donate button is on the website. No gift too small, too large, but we do need to offset some of these costs, and we will try to keep this program as commercial-free as possible. And realize this is the real world. And speaking of the real world, we are in some serious times right now, and I want to point out a couple people who do help make this program in part possible, and one is Steve Quayle. And I'm not a fan of leaving more money than you need to have in the bank to operate on your monthly basis. I've begun the conversion of cash, soon to be worthless cash, into precious metals. And I use Steve Quayle. And I highly recommend Steve. And you can reach him at 406-586-4842. That's 406-586-4842. And with the dark days that seem to be in our approaching future, you need to get ready. If you don't have storable food and water, you're going to be behind the eight ball quickly. And please, I don't want you climbing in my window. I want to be friends with everybody. You need to have at least 6 months to a year of storable food for every member of your family. I use Numana, and I'm really proud to be associated with them. Great prices, great quality, and you can look at the fine product line we have at numana.com/Hodges. Now, the last one is just a public service announcement. I'm affiliated with them in an advisory capacity, And I have a website on scene.life. It's the before it's news answer to Facebook. And I hate Facebook. Absolutely detest them. Now, I do walk into Facebook and post some things because Jesus walked among the sinners. But I detest Facebook, and for all the reasons I said before, and I'd encourage you to go to scene.life. You don't have to give them your identity. There's no background checks. You'll never have to be in trouble because you posted something anti-Clinton. Why Facebook will have assassinate Donald Trump pages. Scene.life, already at 120,000 members and growing. So I would encourage you to do that for your social media needs. Well, that concludes the first part of the people who bring us this first hour. We'll have more in the second hour. And continuing with our commercial-free radio, we have a terrific show for you tonight. And in fact, we have a terrific guest. He's a gentleman who I've been familiar with his work going back to 1980, and we have a lot of new listeners as we have grown quite a bit. And I have told this story before, but I think it bears repeating. In 1980, I got my hands on a book called Trilaterals Over Washington, written by the late Professor Anthony Sutton and co-authored with Patrick Wood. And Patrick Wood's going to be our guest for the first 2 hours this evening. Patrick Wood opened up my eyes as to how corrupt things were with the book Trilaterals Over Washington. Really, to this day, I'd have to rate that's in my top three of all-time favorite books that I read. I mean, I wore the book out. Could not survive all the handling and borrowings I gave to people. And Pat Wood has moved on to, I think, bigger and even more important things with the subject of technocracy. And when you hear the word technocracy, everyone thinks of Pat Wood. And to talk to us about how far this has advanced, and I think this is more of an economic crash, post-martial law phenomena, but we're already seeing technocracy come in. We've had Virginia Farver on, who has talked a lot about the cell phone grid and how it's plugging into the master grid. And Pat Wood is going to educate us this evening in an in-depth interview on technocracy. Pat, thanks for joining us on this Sunday evening.
Oh, I'm really pleased to be here, Dave, and we're going to rock and roll tonight for sure.
Man, you are hitting it out of the park. Every time I turn around, I am seeing something in relation to your articles, or I'm seeing something in relation to people interviewing you. It seems like you're everywhere. You're omnipresent with this. We laid this out, oh gosh, I think probably 9 months ago. You laid out a scenario where everything we use for energy is going to be controlled, regulated, and overpriced. Where have we gone since that interview we've done last?
We're more regulated. We're more overpriced. And it's, what can I say? You could just see it happening. If you understand the whole basics of technocracy and where these people are taking it, this has to happen this way. It's not like we don't have a crystal ball, right? Nobody can foretell the future. But this isn't about foretelling the future. This is just about looking where the road leads. You know, just like you walk out and you look at Highway 10, you say, oh, Los Angeles is that way. You know, yeah. And you know if you stay on that road long enough, you're going to get to L.A. And this is the same thing. When you look at technocracy and what it's doing, what they pledged to do, what they actually have done, you can see the plan and the agenda that they're operating under. And, you know, it's kind of like we're just reading the plays, if you will, like a good football coach, you know, would read the other team's strategy through the plays that they have and stuff, and then he'd try and devise a strategy course to counter it. But we're just kind of looking at what's going on and saying, guys, this is where it's going. And unfortunately, not enough people still are probably listening and pay attention to this. But I will say, in the last 2 years, Dave, we have been able to raise the horizon on the topic of technocracy. There's a lot more people now that are talking about it, writing about it, understanding it, you know, either people listening to some of the interviews and documentaries and stuff that I've done or newsletters or, you know, reading my book, Technocracy Rising, following along with technocracy.news. People all over the world are really starting to understand technocracy for what it is. And as you know, it's bloody insidious. I also want to say, just an introduction, this is the capstone to all of my work on the Trilateral Commission with Tony Sutton. If I could have a trilogy of books, this would have been the third book in my trilogy. It's not just something new. This is what they intended to do when they said in 1973 they're going to create a new international economic order. We just didn't understand what the word new really meant. We didn't because we didn't understand anything about technocracy back then. But now looking back historically with the knowledge that I have now, I can look back and see the Trilateral Commission intended to start this new economic system called technocracy and literally replace capitalism and free enterprise altogether. This is where it's going. They're going to wipe it out. They're going to scrub it off the face of the earth if they can.
How would you classify this as a political economic system? Socialism, communism, fascism, combination of all three? What do you think, Pat?
It's different than anything we've ever seen or studied. It's not fascism. It's not communism. It's not socialism, Marxism. I think Brzezinski had it right when he said that Marxism was a necessary stepping stone to get to this new age, this new technocracy age. Marxism is being used to dismantle society, but the end game is not Marxism per se. Technocracy will result in scientific dictatorship. That's what it was intended to be in the beginning, and that's what we see. That the book Brave New World, written by Aldous Huxley in 1932. That was the year that technocracy was housed at Columbia University in New York City. It was a huge hit. Everybody was talking about technocracy back then. And Huxley looked at it and said, I see a book in this. And he wrote Brave New World. Okay, take a clue. Scientific dictatorship straight ahead. But here's what they said. Here's what the technocrats themselves said that they were going to do back in 1938. Remember, it's a replacement economic system, the only one ever devised in the history of the world to replace capitalism and free enterprise. They said, this direct quote, technocracy is the science of social engineering, the scientific operation of the entire social mechanism to produce and distribute goods and services to the entire population. That's a direct quote. The science of social engineering. That just about sums up everything you and I are complaining about most of the time.
Can we dissect that a little bit, the term scientific dictatorship and social engineering? When you say engineering, do you hear that? That's the second time in 2 weeks we've had an override here on my signal. I've got nothing else on but our satellite Skype and a clock. Mm-hmm. That is bizarre. Strange. Oh, yeah, this happened last week to us. anyway, the term scientific dictatorship. Mm-hmm. What we're looking at here with scientific dictatorship and social engineering, I'm wondering how much of behavior modification comes into this. Propaganda, brainwashing, maybe even electrical stimulation of the brain designed to change mood sets. Where is this at with regard to what you've found?
Well, you know, honestly, I think we're already being shoved into a mold, and most people are just going willingly. We're being conditioned, certainly, by the system. As the system closes in around us, it limits our choices to do things, and people, unfortunately, are just kind of acquiescing to that and saying, oh, well, no big deal. Let me give you a good example. Let's say you got $50,000 in a bank, and it's a Saturday, and you have an opportunity to buy a car for $5,000 cash, right? Go down to your bank, and of course, they're going to be closed, but go to the mechanical teller. We used to call it the ugly teller, but I think that's not politically correct. but you go down to that ugly teller, I'll say it anyway, and you say, I want $5,000. You say, well, you can have $300. That's your daily limit. And you say, dang, okay, now I got $300 in your pocket. You got $50,000 in the bank, less $300. You go down to another branch. So I'll outsmart these guys. I'll go to the branch down the street and get another $300. And by the time the day's over, I can get my $5,000. Well, you're going to go to the next branch and say, I'm sorry, Mr. Hodges, but you've already exceeded your daily limit of $300. You can't have any more money. Now, you can pound on that machine. You can take a crowbar out, hit it. You can do whatever you want. The police will show up in about 5 minutes because you're wrecking a machine and they're taking a picture of you the whole time. And they'll cart you off to jail, and you'll be screaming and hollering, I only want my $50,000. Well, you've been conditioned, and we all have. We all been conditioned. We don't even bother to go to the bank anymore because we know we can't get anything out. Well, you see, this is a small thing, but this is how this conditioning happens. There's rules, you see. There's rules against this. There's rules against that. And when we start picking up on the rules, our behavior changes. It's we start to self-modify, if you will, to avoid coming into conflict with those rules. This happens all the time in every conceivable situation. And so this is what scientific dictatorship is all about. In the end of it, it's not that a person is constraining us. It's that the system is constraining us. Smart grid, got a digital meter on the side of your home? Just wait. There's going to come a day, especially in Phoenix, that the utility is going to say, we've got enough of these thermostats under our control that we will now take control directly of those thermostats when we have a power shortage or an overload or whatever, and so on some hot summer day, we'll just reach in and turn all those thermostats up to 82. Or if it's in the winter, we'll turn the heat down to, you know, 65 or whatever. And they'll do it just because they can. And you, at that point, people will acquiesce to it because it's the rule, you know.
Yeah.
It's exactly. The rule. Who can the fight the rule?
Yeah, the sheep aren't going to fight it. Well, you know, you brought up Phoenix, and I'm sure you're aware of this. APS, for a few years now, has taken volunteers to have every device, all energy, regulated within their home through the smart meter.
Yes, they have.
Yeah, I mean, it was 800 initially. Do you have any idea how far that's grown? It was 800 when it was conceptualized and implemented.
I do not know. But, yeah, they've demonstrated the capability, the technology, et cetera, and it works perfectly. You know, another thing that goes along with this, the system of things, people have to appreciate what a system is like. The so-called Internet of Things is growing just like a wildfire right now. The Internet of Things means that different devices will be able to talk to each other autonomously.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the smart meter on your home can talk autonomously to the devices inside your home. It's got a little software program that runs. So does your refrigerator, so does your thermostat and everything else. And those devices are able to hook up with each other and exchange data. And based on the data they exchange, they can put into play some criteria, you know, some new policy, like lower the thermostat, up the thermostat, you know, whatever the case. Or that digital meter can also talk to your neighbor's digital meters and find out what's going on in the neighborhood, maybe the whole block, maybe the whole, you know, section of five or six blocks. And depending on what the network of things determines, it can set a policy in motion for the entire neighborhood, and there's no human involved at all. It's all done with, you know, with programs that maybe resemble artificial intelligence, but, you know, they're cut loose to communicate with each other within certain parameters, and there's no humans involved, and you can't get out of that net. Who are you going to go and complain to? What are you going to do? I mean, short of getting a getting a 5,000-volt generator and going out short-circuiting everything, which would kill you, wipe out everybody in the whole neighborhood, you know, what can you do? You've got nobody you can complain to. You're just subject to it. That's it. And this is what scientific dictatorship is all about. When that system closes in on you, where you can't move left, right, backwards, or forwards, you have been snared. Just snared. That's it. That's all I can say. Like a rabbit in a trap. You can't get out. And it doesn't do any good to complain to anybody at that point either. This is the nature of scientific dictatorship that's coming down on us today.
Yeah, it'd be kind of like trying to call technical support for HP. there is nobody to talk to. I agree. I agree with you. I mean, just even to try to talk to someone at APS that I lovingly call Arizona people stealing from us, and we could do a whole thing on them. How they're involved in all this and their little Chinese solar energy farms and all that stuff. I'm sure you know about that. And the thing about technocracy that most disturbs me is, as Obama said in a real famous one-minute YouTube statement that's omnipresent on the Internet, he said, utility rates will necessarily skyrocket.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking implementation. Just as point of background, did you know that he was involved through Valerie Jarrett with the creation of the Chicago Climate Exchange?
Absolutely. It was talking about a fraud operation.
Yeah, they took a lot of money, and then, like so many groups do, like Abound Solar, they just took the money and said, oh, we're out of business now. See ya, and kept the money.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A lot of government grants, and yeah, absolutely phenomenal. Well, what does this do to our lifestyle? Let's walk through a typical day in the life of someone who is now a technocratic citizen. What do they want from us?
Well, yeah, they want you to reduce your consumption. They want you to, voluntarily, but we'll make you a deal you can't refuse, to reduce your consumption of everything you consume. They want you, if you look at the United Nations propaganda, they would rather that you eat insect protein instead of a good steak or even a chicken. And they're growing crickets now commercially to harvest the insect protein. They would have you ride a bicycle all the time if they could, rather than a car of any kind that consumes gasoline or diesel. They would like you to take public transportation if necessary, if you have it in your area. They would like you to live in a city and stack and pack housing so that you could just walk to work, walk everywhere you had to go. You could carry your groceries two blocks from the store. they would
Pat,
really
tell everybody before you go on. Tell everybody how big those apartments will be.
Well, you know that the micro apartments that they're making in New York City and San Francisco right now, a big one would be 350 square feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
That would be a big one. Some of them are as big as 225 feet square feet. That's like a jail cell, isn't it? It reminds me of a jail cell. A good sized jail cell could be 10 by 20, something like that. If you're a really good model prisoner, well, dang, that's 200 square feet right there.
Wow.
So, yeah, but here's the mind of a technocrat. What do you need? Why do you need more than 300 square feet anyway? You know, that's not efficient to have a 2,000 square foot apartment or home for one person. I mean, come on. They say, come on, what do you need all that space for anyway? You should do just fine in a 250 square foot apartment. So therefore, go get one and start living in one now, they say. But you know what they don't take into account is that people just don't do stuff because they tell us to do stuff. This is the mind of a technocrat, though. They don't get it. Everything is efficiency to them. Everything is a scientific formula. Everything is a scientific method. You know, if it can't be figured out with a slide rule and a supercomputer, it doesn't exist. And so, they look at the big cattle feedlots and stuff over in Bakersfield area, where you got 50,000 head of cattle. They look at those big feedlots as models of efficiency. And they really are. But they say, you know what? The same principles that work in this feedlot, because they are very efficient, they should work on people just as well. And so they trot off to say, you know what? People really don't need more than 200, maybe 300 square feet to live. They really don't need red meat. They can live just fine on vegetables and maybe a little insect protein as a supplement. And they can just ride their little bicycles to work, or maybe they can get a bicycle with a battery on it and a motor or something, but they don't need those big gas-guzzling cars, whatever. And you know what they say? Cattle just, all the cattle in the world, they fart too much. That's what they say. Too much methane being produced by those cattle. We're going to destroy the cattle industry. And just enough of that. Well, this is insanity. These people have jumped the rails, Dave. They've just jumped the rails, and they're completely off the track.
One thing I want to point out, though, too, your square footage quotes, they're not just for one person, Pat. I've read these are family arrangements.
Well, I know.
And they want a family of three.
Stack them, attack them.
They want negative population growth. And that's another area I want to go to. We're living under this illusion that we're overpopulated and we've exceeded the Earth's carrying capacity to supply food and so forth. But in Europe, they have a negative birth rate, and it's reached a critical can't return to normal phase. Can you talk about that?
Yes. They will. They're beyond that right now. They cannot. It's impossible for Europe to make a comeback demographically at this point. And at this point, I hate to say in America, we're in the same position right now. It's virtually impossible for us. When I say impossible, I mean no society in the world, people group in the world, has ever come back when it reaches a certain low point in its birth rate. And Europe has passed that. The white Anglo-Saxon component, at least, of America has surpassed that level. And we're on the downhill decline. There ain't no doubt about it. And all of the population control garbage that started even way back with people like Paul Ehrlich in the 70s, who wrote the population bomb. And by the way, here's a technocrat, Paul Ehrlich. If people don't know who he is.
No, I do.
His book sold millions and millions of copies all over the world, translated virtually every language. And he said that the world is going to be so overpopulated by the year 2000 that we'll all be standing elbow to elbow. That's what he said. And you know what? People said, oh, man, the guy's a PhD. What a genius. This is a great book. And they bought it and sold it all over the place. You know what? Paul Ehrlich was an entomologist. You know what an entomologist is? It's a guy that studies bugs. He had a PhD in entomology, and he took his scientific knowledge of bugs and rolled it over on another species called humans, and made all these wild predictions, not one of which has come true, by the way, since he wrote his book. Not a single prediction. And yet people still virtually worship the ground that he walked on.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it's incredible.
I had to read that book in a sociology class I took as an undergrad on population demographics.
Yeah.
The birth rate of the United States, correct me if I'm wrong, if I remember correctly, I think it's 1.8, and no nation has ever come back from less than 1.8. Is that true?
That's correct. That's exactly right.
And we need 2.1 to maintain, correct?
That is correct also.
Yeah, that's my understanding. And, well, immigration should take care of some of that for us, although the way we're doing it is crazy. But Europe, I mean, they're getting an influx of millions of people from the Middle East. Will that not correct the situation for them?
Well, no. The Middle East is a different culture altogether. The people that owned and controlled and culturized Europe are on the way out, and a new society is coming in and going to take over completely. That's the whole point of the immigration thing. They're coming in at a time where they can just drive all the rest of them into the ground and say, you know, get out of here now. We don't want you anyway. And they're going to change the entire culture. But, you know, I don't want to say it in any kind of a racist way, but the white Anglo-Saxon type people in Europe are doomed. And everybody else in the world knows it. You know, it's not that they don't like them. It's just that they're doomed because of the demographic stuff that they bought into. You know, whether it be, you know, the Planned Parenthood mentality or any other reason to not have children. You know, my headline story right now on technocracy.news is a story from NPR. You know, it was PBS. And the story is like this. Maybe we should protect our kids by not having them. This is in light of global warming, you know, because global warming is such a threat to the world. Maybe we should protect our kids by not having them in the first place. They're actually teaching this now. I mean, they aired this program on national TV. Now, and then you got Zika, you know, the Zika scare on top of that. Oh, my gosh, you can't have sex because, you know, my baby will be deformed. People aren't having babies because they've hammered this message in for the last 40 years. And people now just, you know what, this is just selfish to have kids now. I might as well just give it up. Why have kids? Like I said, these people that are telling us this are off the rails, Dave. They're absolutely off the rails.
No, I think they're responding to market forces. In other words, the real power behind this, you know, the hidden cabal, if you will, manipulates them like they do everything else with money. I mean, surely people can see through this when they're doing it. It's not a matter of forgive me for I know not what I do. Yep. They do know what they're doing, but they're living in the moment in instant gratification. I have no doubt that this is true. But I look at it, you know, I always like to look at motivation. In one hand, Pat, I know that industrialization lowers birth rate. tremendously, because then you get female equality, women start working, you have delayed childbirth, and that by itself lowers birth rate. If the globalists are trying to sell us on one hand, we're overpopulated, but on the other hand, they want to prevent normal industrialization expansion, which would lower birth rate. I don't get the conflict here, the contradiction.
From their point of view, from the people pushing technocracy, which are the Trilateral Commission types, by the way, what they're doing, their agenda makes perfect sense to them. They have a plan, they have a timetable, they have intention to overthrow capitalism and free enterprise on a global basis. To you and I, who would like to hang on to capitalism and free enterprise and everything it's brought us in America, for instance, we would be their enemy, if you will. But to them, their goal number one is to deindustrialize the world, to disassemble and dismantle the current world order altogether, because they knew this, the technocrats knew this back in the 1930s when it originally was started. The only way technocracy is going to thrive and be established is by the economic destruction of capitalism and free enterprise. They almost pulled it off in the 30s because of the Great Depression. And a lot of people were certain that capitalism was dead for good, died and buried, and that technocracy was going to rise right then. Some technocrats even called on Roosevelt when he got elected to declare himself dictator and just implement technocracy directly, and, oh, by the way, in the process, just dismiss Congress summarily. Tell them to go home. They're done.
Kind of like what Obama's done already, you know.
Kind of, yeah. You see, these technocrats hate politicians. They have no use whatsoever for a parliamentary process where the people are represented. Because what do you need parliamentary process for if science is right? Science is right. In their mind, science is right. What is there to discuss? You know, global warming is a fait accompli. What's there to discuss? Of course, it isn't. They're using pseudoscience, as we know now.
Yeah. Facts,
but
not
they
evidence.
Don't,
yeah.
But they don't know that, and they say, what is there to discuss? There is nothing to discuss. Conversation over. Goodbye.
Well, they're trying to make it illegal to even speak against the pseudoscience of global warming. There are, I think Germans have prohibitions against it, if I'm not mistaken. And there's been serious discussion here that what they call climate deniers should be jailed.
That's right. That's coming. I mean, you can see the pressure on right now. You've got school, the school system in Portland, I think it's the Portland some school district. They have outlawed or banned all books and papers that had anything negative to say about climate change. They took every book, every conceivable thing out of the school system that would talk about climate change. And the teachers are not allowed to even bring it up, or they'll be fired. Well, you can see the handwriting on the wall. You can see where this is going. This is how the Inquisition started, by the way. In other words, if you don't believe just like me, I'm going to torture and beat you until you confess that you believe like me. That's what the Inquisition is all about. That's exactly why Al Gore says climate deniers deserve to be punished. Why? Because they don't believe like you, Al? You nutcake? Yeah, that's right. You don't believe like me? You deserve to be punished. That's scary talk.
Yeah. And if you believe like Al Gore, you get the Al Gore coupon certificate for massages. Anyway, another topic for another time. Yeah, these people are such moral degenerates, my point for bringing that up. But, Pat, I guess the thing that really concerns me, too, is correct me if I'm wrong on this, because I'm working off about 7 years of memory on this, but Holdren, the science advisor to Obama, co-authored a book in which he talked about post-birth abortions, I think it was up until age 3. In other words, he's talking murder of children deemed not redeemable or trainable in life.
That's right. Yes, he did. He was never held accountable for that.
How has he escaped public scrutiny advocating for infanticide in the United States? I don't understand how this has escaped the attention of the media.
Well, you know, the media has been bought, paid, and, you know, completely subsumed by the global elite, even starting back with the Trilateral Commission in 1973. The whole national media scene was subverted for their purposes back then, through ownership, through, you know, directors being voted into their boards of directors of the big media companies and stuff. They don't want to talk about this stuff. It's not in the agenda. And so, you know, stories like on Holdren, it gets no traction. They don't want to talk about it. And you could argue that several ways. Well, you know, how many babies have been aborted in the last 45 years now? It's something like, gosh, I don't know, 45 million or something like that?
I think it's close to 60, if I'm not mistaken.
Let's split the difference, say it's 52 and a half. Whatever. Yeah. That's an inconceivable number of, you know, that's a pile of flesh. It's inconceivable. All the babies that have been murdered through abortion, and you know, much of it at the hands of groups like Planned Parenthood. And you say, how can this just escape notice? Well, you know what? When you boil it right down, I'm going to be very politically incorrect right now. Murderers have an honor code with each other. You don't blow the whistle on my murders, and I won't blow the whistle on yours. I think that about sums it up.
No, I could not agree with you more. They definitely, well, like I said, honor among thieves, I guess, is what you'd call it.
That's right. That's about it.
You know, but who died and gave them the reins of power? This is, I mean, where
no
does
kidding.
This came me, from? Yeah. The origins, is this an outgrowth of the divine right of kings or some ancient
concept?
Well,
I know. There's a large flavor of eugenics in this whole thing, for sure. And eugenics is making a big comeback thanks to technocracy and transhumanism as well. But, you know, a little anecdotal story, Dave. I think maybe I mentioned this to you before, but I wouldn't be here if it were not for the eugenics movement, because my mother, who's now passed, she passed in 2000 at the age of 74. Her mother passed in 1992 at the age of almost, I think she was 97 or 8 years old. Back in the mid-1930s, eugenics was running amok in California. It was the rage back in those days that we're going to cleanse the genetic pool. In fact, the eugenics movement in California was so successful that Adolf Hitler modeled his own eugenics program after the University of California at Berkeley. That's how succinct it was, and, you know, whatever, defined. Well, my grandmother had a firstborn child, a male, who was mentally retarded. And by the time he was 5 years old, everybody knew he was mentally retarded because he wasn't progressing. And eugenics doctor got a hold of my grandmother and says, your son has a genetic defect, and it's in your genes, and it's going to pass from generation to generation, and you need to stop your family from having any more children. So when my mother was 17 years old, she was drugged down forcibly to a hospital, and they sterilized her against her will, so she couldn't have children.
Wow.
Several years later, when the doctor... or when the male child was put into an institution, he got old and my grandmother couldn't take care of him, she put him into an institution down in Santa Barbara, and another doctor, more modern doctor, came along and examined him very carefully and said, you know, this child is not mentally retarded. He has suffered oxygen deprivation at birth. And they found out that the umbilical cord had been wrapped around his neck when he was born. And that all he had was just oxygen deprivation, and it gave him, you know, it gave him this mental retardation to about the age of 6 or 7, something like that. And so my mother was sterilized for nothing, as were some other 35,000 women during that same period of time, possibly. These people were off their rockers, these doctors and stuff that bought into eugenics, and they were just telling people like my grandmother, you can't let this happen. It's your social responsibility. Don't you care about the world? Don't you care about society? Don't you care about the future of mankind? Well, come on, lady. You gotta just stop those genes from progressing any further. So she said, I'll do it. And my mother took the brunt of it. Needless to say, my mother and grandmother didn't get along very well for the rest of their life. That's another story.
It's crazy First of all, you know, I'm wondering how many different laws were violated there as I listened to the story. I mean, well, you're right. Hitler did claim that he got a lot of what he did and wanted to do and what Mengele did from us right here in this country. But we kind of went the other way after World War II. We went more to self-determination and less for eugenics. But I agree with you. The pendulum has swung back, and we're now into... I agree. The eugenics movement is fully, fully back. And do you think that we're going to see a day when a woman in pregnancy is going to have to undergo testing to see if the baby is going to be, quote, talented enough, or is it going to be too defective to, and it'll be a drain on society?
Well, you know, I know. I would just say that people ought to go back and read the book Brave New World again, and they'll find the answer to that question exactly. And this has to come. This has to happen at some point. Where, because the human genome is known now, and mapping tools are progressing now as well, where you know, you can walk in a doctor's office now, and the equipment's still expensive, but it's coming down in price. You can have your genome can be mapped in a matter of just 3 or 4 hours.
Yes,
and they know everything about you there is to know. But remember, a lot of it's still just crystal ball stuff. They say they know everything about you, but they really don't, because they still don't understand the human genome and exactly how it works. But they'll say they do, and then they'll tell you that, oh yeah, you need to do this, this, and this, and this. And when they start to size you up as a, you know, the Obamacare death panel, so that we used to talk about, right? When they start sizing up how much resources you're going to take as opposed to the next guy down the street, how can anybody really think that they're not going to take that into account when they start making decisions on who gets care and who doesn't? How can they possibly think that? They're already doing it, for Pete's sake. If you're if you're a vet, for instance, that has, you know, some kind of whatever might be wrong with you, whether it's post-traumatic stress syndrome or anything else, God help you, being at the mercy of the VA system. You know, it's like... They sit there and look at their budget, and they say, "We're not going to meet with this group of people. We're just going to take them off. Just keep moving them to the bottom of the list. Maybe they'll die, and they just quit coming back." You know, I mean, this kind of thinking is already going on. This also is the mind of a technocrat, because a technocrat is consumed about with the whole picture. He's consumed about the balance in the whole economic system. Over consumers are to be. Curtailed over consumers, whatever it might be. If you water your grass too much, shame on you. If you drive a gas guzzling car, shame on you. If you need too much health care, shame on you. And you say, but wait, health care isn't the same thing as driving a big gas guzzling car. Well, it's not to you, but it is to them. They don't see any difference in that. You're just a consumer. You're just an eater. That's all. I want to say useless, but you're just an eater, just like the cattle in the feedlot. And if a cow or a steer gets sick in a feedlot, they might give it a shot of penicillin or something but you know what? If it's still sick 2 days later, it's off to the sausage factory for you, bossy. That's it. You know, here comes. Hey, call McDonald's. Get him out here.
Well, I've got a story for you that really fits as a good example. We know somebody that, if she were 70, on her 70th birthday, and she had a brain aneurysm that was completely operable, they would have performed the surgery. But when she became 70 years and one day, she was given comfort medication and said they can't medically intervene.
Yep.
That's Obamacare. I mean, this is a case I personally know about. Yep. And, of course, we're still trying to read the bill so we can find out what's in it, as Nancy Pelosi said. But, Pat, you're right. This is Obamacare is eugenics. It was modeled in part after the National Healthcare Service in Britain, where they send people to starve to death in these, I don't even know what you call them, death homes is what I'll call them. And they put them in there. and they give them a few calories intravenously, and then over a series of days, they withdraw them out, and basically they starve the person to death. They don't even die of what they went in there for.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's two sides of eugenics. There's passive eugenics, which is kind of what you're talking about now, and there's active eugenics, where the area around birth is concerned. Genetic modification of human embryos. Some people have called it designer babies. I think that's a bad term to use. But now the geneticists, with these new gene editing tools that are on the market now, geneticists are looking at modifying the human genome and creating people in the image that they want to create them. This, again, go back and read Brave New World. I don't know how many times I can say it on your program. People need to read this. This is exactly what they did in Brave New World. They determined what the propensity, what the potential of a child would be born from birth. They did it genetically in a test tube before the baby was you know, grown up to where it could live on its own. Some were created to be grunts. You know, gardeners, if you will, just doing nothing. Others were created to be the rocket scientists, so to speak. And then there was different classes in between. And they did this. They engineered these people scientifically so that they could have a multi-class society that they could manage by science.
Well, Pat, that theme was exemplified in the movie Superman. I think it was two summers ago. And they were all on planet Krypton, and this is before Superman's parents launched him in a rocket that ended up on Earth. But they had a discussion in there about genetic predetermination. The infamous General Zod says, "I was bred by the powers to be a general." And they talked about that Superman had been the first live birth on the planet in hundreds of years. I think it's a matter of conditioning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, are you familiar with the movie Elysium?
You know, I haven't seen it. I've heard about it. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, where the elite live above the planet in wonderful conditions, and everybody else lives in squalor on the Earth. Is that what we're headed towards?
Some form of it. I don't know. We're going to live. Anybody's going to be living on top of the Earth, but what technology?
Yeah, let me back up. The squalor part is where my question should have been centered.
We're headed towards what I call a neo-feudalistic system, where it's going to resemble old-style feudalism, where the land barons owned everything and everybody else squats on a piece of land somewhere and tries to eke out a living. It's the ultimate expression of haves and the have-nots, and the have-nots are going to be very miserable people. Now, what technocracy seeks to do on a global basis is grab up all the resources in the world. All the resources in the world. Yeah, I'm talking about the wealth of the world, the mines, the timber, the agriculture, all the things that comes out of the earth that creates real wealth. These people are dead set now. It's not about money anymore. They want the resources themselves. And once they have the resources and ownership of everything locked up in a global common trust, then they can clamp down on that, and nobody gets into that global common trust except that they let them in. And I'll tell you what, you and I are not likely to be let into that, where we might, do something like, I think I'd like to be a farmer, and I'd like to have, 1,000 acres of my own, but I have to go to the global trust, if you will, and put in an application to farm a certain 1,000 acres or something somewhere. They're going to tell you to take a flying leap. Just get out of here, you idiot. You don't ever come back either. And, now if you're somebody like an Archer's Daniel Midland, or you're somebody like a Monsanto or a BP oil, you'll be welcome with open arms. The big companies are going to get in and get what they want, but you and I aren't going to get in and get anything. It'll all be run by these, by the trustees, if you will, over these resources. And people say, that's fantastic. Look, Look at what BLM has done in the West, for Pete's sake. Why do you think they're gobbling up millions of acres of land, locking the roads, closing the roads off, putting lock gates on them, and signs saying it's a felony if you trespass on this ground? Why do you think the United Nations or the World Bank and the IMF are going out to countries in poor areas of the world that are all up to their eyeballs in debt, and they're offering them debt for land swaps? They say, you know, we know you can't ever get out of debt. It's kind of reminiscent of economic hitman, isn't it? We know you're never going to get out of debt, but here's what we can do for you. We will forgive a portion of your debt if you give us a portion of your land. And we would like that land right over there. There's nobody on it anyway. And, of course, they know what kind of minerals or whatever is on that land. And they're trying to talk these countries into doing this. And some countries are starting to say, that's a great deal. Thank you very much. We'll gladly give you some of our land. You can put it into one of them World Heritage Foundation things where, you know, it's off limits to everybody and it's a game preserve now or whatever. But, you know, we'll never have economic development rights again ever. And, you know, they're doing this all over the planet, gobbling up resources that used to belong to the people. This is the end goal. This is the game that they're playing. It's not about the money. The money at this point, and you know this is true too, when the Federal Reserve was created in 1913, a dollar was worth a dollar. Now, a dollar back then is worth about 2 cents today. They've milked the currencies of the world as much as they can ever be milked. There's nothing left to milk out of the currency system in the world today. And that's why we see these currencies gyrating out of control around the world. That's why you see the central banks of the world loading up on junk bonds and every other cockeyed thing that you can imagine. They're bankrupt. Technically, the central banking system is thoroughly bankrupt right now. This is partly, you know, when these people wash their hands of the currency system and say, okay, capitalism, goodbye, good riddance, we're washing our hands of you, we're pulling the rug out from under the monetary systems of the world, all of which are fiat, and we're just going to let it sink. And out of the ashes of the economic devastation that will happen, technocracy will rise up like the giant phoenix bird and take over the economic landscape. We'll deliver you. We'll save you. Technocracy can do it. God help us when that happens. But, you know, this is the game we see them playing on the global chess, you know, the chess match, if you will. They're setting aside resources, getting them out of our hands, putting them into their hands, so that the only people get near it are people they want near it, and it won't be you and me. We'll be squatters in the end.
How are they going to reduce the population in your estimation?
I think it's already happening. You talked about demographics already. I think it's already happening. I really do.
Well,
but, you know,
let me reference something specific. I'm talking about the multitudes of quotes out there from known globalists who say that we want to reduce the world's population about 90 to 95%.
Right. That was in the Agenda 21 book, by the way, the original Agenda 21 book.
Yeah, I know that.
From 1992, yeah.
Do you have any theory on how they would go about doing this?
I'll tell you, I put up a story on Technocracy News. It came from, let me see where this came from. It's from Great Britain. I got to pull the story. Yes, from the Daily Mail. And here's the headline from the Daily Mail. It says, could we survive a zombie outbreak? Scientists discuss the chilling ways we might stop the spread. That's the headline, right? And at first I thought, this smacks like The Onion or something, you know, like this.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, guys. You know, I think this is a fake story. But then I read the story and I realized it wasn't a fake story at all, because the lady that wrote this, actually wrote the article, is a professor of microbiology at the Manchester Metropolitan University in Great Britain. And she runs a lot of people, and she's like an egghead type. And they actually had this discussion, scientists did, on how we're going to stop a zombie outbreak. And I thought, these people have been watching too much science fiction movies or something. Nope. Man, they need to have some caffeine or something to slow down. But then you look down in the article, and one of the options that they talk about is a selective cull. They said, and this is a direct quote, a selective cull that involves attempting to remove the infected individuals from the population permanently is another option. These scientists are actually talking about this, Dave. It's like, okay, now I'm not making a prediction, but they're talking about the concept of a global pandemic, in a sense, that would turn people into zombies and threaten to wipe out the whole, you know, the human race or something, or at least a whole society. So, and other things, yeah, one of the options is a selective culling of the population to get rid of the sickness.
A genetically engineered bioweapon release?
Well,
maybe a series. Is that what they're hinting at?
I don't think they were hinting in this particular article that, you know, exactly this is what is, you know, could or might happen, you know, is going to happen, whatever. But we see stuff flying around. I shouldn't use the word fly. I'm thinking about mosquitoes, right? We see all this Zika scare right now, you know, where a virus is carried by this mosquito, and they say it's going to produce all this, the genetic devastation on pregnant women and stuff, on their children. And I don't agree with that, by the way. I think it's probably just a big, you know, phony thing like H1, whatever it was, the virus before was bird flu or something. But this will probably pass. But listen, in the meantime, a company from England has been approved by the FDA to release genetically modified mosquitoes in Florida. And why this company? Well, I won't go into that, but I have an article up on Technocracy News on that as well. But they're introducing genetically modified mosquitoes that, when they breed with the Zika mosquito, the offspring will be sterile. They'll die. They can't produce offspring. You know, they said, well, that's a good way to solve it. We'll just make sure that those mosquitoes die, because they, you know, we've introduced this this new genetically modified mosquito. Now, it doesn't take a long stretch to figure out if they can do this with a mosquito, they can do this with anything that they choose. You follow what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
They could do it with a human just as easily as they could do it with a mosquito.
And well, Pat, let's hold it right there, because we're going to go into our top of the hour break now. And I'd like to continue with this idea about the selective culling and the possible modes and means they could use excuse me, to do that. And you can tell at the break, I'm going to go get a drink of water. We'll see all of you in hour number two.